Try to breathe in a way that feels refreshing. Breathe in a way that feels easeful. Breathe in a way that gladdens the mind. If you're going to get the mind to settle down, it has to settle down with something pleasant. And you're creating something pleasant inside. You have these potentials inside. There's the potential for refreshing breathing, the potential for easeful breathing, potentials that can gladden the mind. They're here. It's simply a matter of discovering them and developing them. You look at the Buddha's instructions for breath meditation. They're not just, I will sit here watching things coming and going. Or I'll put aside thoughts of the past, thoughts of the future, and watch equanimously as I breathe in, breathe out. The Buddha actually rejected that way of doing breath meditation. He said it's one way of doing it, but it doesn't get the best results. You look at his steps, and they're very proactive. The first two are exercises in getting some discernment, in other words, being sensitive to what long breathing feels like, what short breathing feels like. But then the remainders are trainings. You train yourself, I will breathe in such a way, I will breathe out in such a way. You're going to make a difference. You're going to explore potentials here. Develop skillful ones, abandon unskillful ones. This is why the word for meditation, Pali, is develop. You look at the factors for awakening. The Buddha says there are potentials there. You can feed them or you can starve them. By feeding them, they grow. For example, analysis of qualities. There's the potential for skillful and unskillful thoughts in the mind. And you want to see the distinction. Explore that distinction. There's a potential for rapture, but it doesn't say what it is. But it's there in your body. You can find it. And you start with that question, what kind of breathing would feel refreshing right now? What would feel really good down into the torso? Feel refreshing. Bathing your face. Bathing your head. Bathing your arms and shoulders, your legs and feet. With energy that feels good. Explore that. We're here to explore potentials, to develop potentials. As the Buddha said, that's one of the ways in which we gain discernment, and one of the best ways to gain discernment. He listed three altogether. You come to an understanding from listening to things. You come to an understanding through thinking things through. Those are preliminary forms of understanding. You would have a sketch in your mind about how things should work, how the path works, which topics are worth thinking about, which ones are not worth thinking about. And then you think about the things that are worth thinking about. These would be in line with the duties of the Four Noble Truths. You want to comprehend suffering. You want to abandon the cause. You want to realize the cessation of suffering, and you do that by developing the path. Those are things you want to think about. So you have at least a good sketch in your head about what you're supposed to be doing. But then it's in the actual doing it that you gain the discernment. Someone once asked me, how is it that in meditation you get to see the true nature of things? And as I told the person, it's not that we're here to see the true nature of things, we're here to see how things work, how things function. Because that's something you can actually explore as you meditate. You can sit and look at a cup. But you can't get to the cup's innate nature by looking at it. You can break it into little pieces and you still can't get to its innate nature. But you can learn. If I do things with the cup, what is the cup good for? It's good for holding liquids. Okay, you use it for holding liquids. But here we're going deeper than cups and things outside. We're going into the mind. How does the mind function? Well, you try different things. Because the functioning of the mind, the malfunctioning of the mind is what causes suffering. And you can learn something about the malfunction of the mind and how to solve it by listening, by thinking. But you're not really going to know the mind. Do you actually try to do things with it? Like here, we're trying to get the mind to settle down. That's going to involve a struggle. You're trying to stick with one intention. But there'll be other intentions coming in. So how do you withstand them? Part of it is by developing that first intention. You develop that by augmenting it with a sense of well-being. When you sit down to meditate, you may not have to tell yourself, I'm going to be here to meditate, in case it sounds like a chore. Tell yourself, I'm going to sit here and I'm going to enjoy breathing. Find how much refreshment I can get out of the breath, how much ease I can get out of the breath. That strengthens the original intention. You're going to be more likely to stay and to enjoy staying. The more you enjoy it, the better it goes. As John Fuang said, the meditation needs a sense of rapture and refreshment as a lubricant, just as an engine needs a lubricant. If it runs out of oil, it seizes up. In the same way, the mind begins to seize up if it doesn't get any refreshment from the meditation. It becomes too much of a chore. So just getting the mind to settle down, you learn a lot about it. You learn that you need to have something to focus on, and you're going to have to talk to yourself to stay. And if you want to give rise to a sense of well-being, to reinforce your original intention, you have to talk about what kind of breathing would feel good right now. Try things out. Pass judgment as to which seems best. Stay with it. If after a while it doesn't feel so good, you can try something else. Once it does feel good, then how can you spread it around? How can you maintain it? To do this, you're going to have to use some perceptions, the images you hold in mind about where the breath goes in the body, your perception of what feels good, what doesn't feel good. As you engage in these fabrications, you get to know that factor of fabrication, independent co-arising. Now, you may have read about it, you may not have read about it, but it's good to know the words. To have a vocabulary to describe these things to yourself as you're doing them. But you really get to know these things, these activities, by engaging in them and trying to do something good with them. The same goes for discernment. You're trying to understand your clinging. Well, you're going to see clinging in your distractions, things that pull you away. Why do you go away? What are the steps? The more you try to cut things off, cut off a distraction at the pass, the quicker you get, the more you see the various steps you go through. You can begin to dig down to parts that are fairly subconscious. But you're going to bring them up into the light. You learn about your clingings, your attachments, by resisting them. Because we're here to learn about activities, to learn about cause and effect. We learn about ourselves as cause and effect. The more you get to know how the mind works, the closer you get to seeing what the Buddha had to say. You define yourself by your attachments. A monk came to see him one time and asked him, a being, to what extent is there a being? Now some people might say, well, there's no being there, it's just causes and conditions rolling through. But the Buddha said, no, there is such a thing as a being. Wherever there's attachment, there's going to be a being. What are people attached to? They're attached to form, feelings, perceptions, thought constructs, consciousness. Your sense of what you are. Something that you define. You define through your clingings, through your attachments. You should find that thought liberating, because if how you're defining yourself is unsatisfactory, you can define yourself in new ways. This is what the Buddha has you do as you practice meditation. You get better things to cling to, better form, better forms of form, better feelings, perceptions, thought constructs, consciousness, take advantage of the fact that your identity is fluid. But also realize you want to go beyond that at some point. And at first the idea may scare you. If I'm defined by my clings and there's no clings, what's going to happen to me? Well, the answer, short answer, is that you need a me. You'll have the ultimate happiness. Your whole sense of self is in service of your desire for happiness. This is why you cling to these things to begin with. But the Buddha is telling you there's something better when you let go. And at first you don't fully trust him. But you really need to give him a try. Make the best me that you can out of these aggregates by getting the mind into concentration. And you keep in the back of your mind, though, the fact that there is something that comes from letting go that's even better. The Buddha promises that. And when you finally get to the point where you realize that even though this state of concentration is really good, it still has to be maintained. There's still an effort that has to go into it. Wouldn't it be better if there's something that didn't require constant maintenance? That's when the mind really inclines to the idea that maybe there is something deathless and you're willing to sacrifice all your attachments to get there. Now in getting there, the Buddha says you put the mind through a point where the question of existence or non-existence doesn't mean anything to you. You see things arising. The idea of non-existence doesn't occur to you. You see things passing away. The idea of existence doesn't occur to you. When non-existence and existence don't have any meaning, then you're not afraid of you not existing. You just see suffering. There's only one thing to do, and that's to let go. This is where the Buddha says you have the arising of the realization. All phenomena are not self. It's a value judgment. They're not worth clinging to anymore. You clung to them because you thought they would give happiness. But they don't. You want something better. You're willing to let go. And then you let go of that statement too. Because that too is a phenomenon. That too is a Dhamma. So you don't even cling to that. That's when the mind is freed. The question came up a while back. If all things are not self, all phenomena are not self, then what gets reborn? On the one hand, the Buddha never talks about what gets reborn, a thing that takes rebirth. He talks instead about the processes by which it happens. Here again, he brings in the idea of a being. He gives an analogy. There's a house is on fire, and the flame goes from that house and sets other things on fire. What does the flame hold to as it goes from one house to another? It clings to the wind. It's sustained by the wind. In the same way, when a being leaves this body and goes to another one, now there's this bundle of attachments. What is it sustained by? It's sustained by craving. That's the process. You want to put an end to that process because all you're doing is just continuing your suffering. If you see things, all things as not self, the purpose of that is to stop the process of rebirth. You see, there's nothing really worth clinging to. You don't continue your suffering. You learn all this by developing. We can talk about it, we can think about it, but you really know it only when you've done the work of developing. Remember those duties for the Four Noble Truths. The duty with regard to the cessation of suffering is not to figure it out beforehand. It's to realize it. And how do you realize it? By developing the path. It's part of the discernment that comes from developing. So, this is why we work with potentials right here, right now. There is this potential in the mind to find this level of true release. And you work on it by developing step by step the things that get you there. All too many people won't have that one realization that will suddenly open things up and give them sudden awakening. As if a change in your conceptions would bring awakening. Well, a lot more work is done. There has to be the work of developing, learning about cause and effect by manipulating cause and effect. We start doing right here, getting the mind into concentration. Whatever is needed to get the mind to settle down with a sense of well-being, you do it. Get the mind in a good mood so that it's willing to settle down. Give it something good to settle down on. In the course of that, you're going to learn a lot through developing. So pay attention to what you're doing right here. Because in the act of paying attention to your actions, that's where the real discernment lies. Not just any actions, the actions of following the path, developing the path, taking it as far as it can go.